it now. Ready for what? He said, and then realized the link to Constanza was still open. He addressed her. You knew this trip was going ahead, didn't you? She had some idea that I'd be taking you outside, his father said, before the girl could defend herself. That's all. You mustn't, can't, blame her for that. It's a flight outside the ship. Everyone in security has to know about it, and since we're not crossing over to one of the other ships, the reason for it. Which is? To learn what happened to your mother. All the while they had been moving, but now they reached the Fate Bay's sheer metal wall. A circular door in the wall whisked open to admit them, the taxi sliding off its pallet into a long, red-lit chamber, not much wider than the machine itself. They waited there for a minute or so while the chamber's air was sucked out. Then the taxi moved downwards abruptly, sinking into a shaft. Skye's father took the opportunity to lean over to adjust Skye's belt, and then they were outside the ship, blackness below, and the gentle curve of the hull above their heads. The feeling of vertigo was quite intense, even though there was nothing below to suggest height. They dropped. It was only for an instant, but it was nauseating enough, like the feeling Skye remembered from the rare times when he had been near the ship's center, where gravity dwindled almost to zero. Then the taxi's engines kicked in, and something like weight returned. Expertly, his father vectored the taxi away from the looming gray bulk of the massive ship, adjusting their course with taps of steering thrust, his fingers as delicate on the controls as a concert pianist's. "I feel sick," Skye said. "Close your eyes. You'll be fine in a moment." Despite the disquiet he felt about his mother's death, and the fact that this trip had something to do with it, Skye could not completely suppress a thrill of excitement at the thought of being outside. He released the safety buckle and started clambering all around the taxi to get a better view. His father scolded him gently and told him to get back in his seat, but not with any great conviction. Then he yawed the taxi around and smiled as the great ship they had just left came into sight. "Well, there she is. Your home for the last 10 years, Skye, and the only home I've ever known. I know, there's no need to hide your feelings. She's not exactly beautiful, is she?"
"She's big, though."
"She'd better be. She's just about all we'll ever have. You're luckier than me, of course. At least you'll see Journey's End." Skye nodded, but his father's quiet certainty that he would be dead by then could not help but make him feel sad. He looked back to the ship. The Santiago was 2 kilometers long, longer than any ship which had ever sailed any of Earth's oceans, and easily the equal of any of the largest craft which had plied the solar system in the days before the flotilla's departure. Her skeleton, in fact, was an old fusion-drive space freighter, retrofitted for a journey into interstellar space. With small variations, the other flotilla ships had been converted from the same sources. This far from any star, almost no light fell upon the ship, and she would have been invisible were it not for the light spilling from tiny windows dotted along her length. At the very front was a big sphere encircled by lights. That was the command section, where the bridge was, and where the crew spent most of their time when they were on duty. It was where the navigational and scientific instruments were kept, forever pointed towards the destination star. The one they had nicknamed Swan, but which Skye knew really had the much less poetic name 61 Cygni A, one cool red half of a binary star system located in the random sprinkle of stars which had been given the name Cygnus in antiquity. Only towards the end of the voyage would the ship flip around to bring its tail to bear on Swan, so that it could slow itself down with exhaust thrust from the engines.